Welcome to the Northern Business Podcast, a regular discussion with people in the north of England who lead businesses, employ people, and all have ideas to help our economy grow. In the studio today, we've Josh York, Managing Director at 2828 Property Group, and down the line, we have Ilona Olcock, who's co-founder at Elevate. Now, the Northern Business Podcast is produced by Recognition PR. We serve scores of companies in different sectors across the country, some of which contribute to the podcast sometimes. And we're kindly sponsored by Virtue Motors. That's one of the top automotive retailers in the UK, with a network of dealerships representing some of the world's most popular brands. It also owns the successful commercial vehicle retailer Vans Direct. I'm Graham Robb, and today I'm joined co-presenting the programme with my colleague Josh Mason. Hi, Josh.
Hi, Graham. Thanks very much for finally letting me on the podcast sofa.
Well, it's great, and it's very confusing for me because I'm looking at the two Joshes, Josh, our guest, and Josh, my colleague and co-presenter. We're going to do this, aren't we? In the next few months, we're going to get different people from Recognition and Rota, so it's not all me.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we're coming back after a quiet summer. I always think this time of year is really interesting because it's the new school year, but actually it feels more like a new year for businesses than January does, I always think.
I think that's
everybody
right.
Comes back, they've had a break, they come back full of zeal, eager to get on. This year's slightly different because, of course, we've got a slight unknown quantity with the budget coming up and people are sort of hedging their bets a bit. But generally speaking, it's a very exciting time to be in business.
And our firm, our small business based in the Northeast, it's been a reasonably busy summer and we've been working on a few things we can pick on in a minute. But the one thing I've observed compared to previous years, and I've been doing this 37 years, so we can give a reasonable comparison, is that there was a lot of enthusiasm in the early part of the summer and throughout August and in September, somewhat because of the potential threats of taxation in the budget and some of the downbeat commentary, I think things are slowing down quite significantly.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we had the election in July. Everybody was excited. It was going to be a fresh start. Lots was going to change. It was the change everybody needed, that everybody had been calling for. And then the mood music changed. And it's been rather more downbeat since then. And now, of course, everybody slightly feels as though they're in a holding pattern, waiting to find out what the damage is going to be for us all.
And everyone feels gloomy about it. We've been working on some interesting things throughout the summer. I've been working this week on something for one of our motor retailer clients, not an adjacent to the sponsor of this podcast. And that was the Z mandate issue, which the general public aren't really across yet, but people in automotive are getting to be increasingly aware of it. It was on the front page of a national newspaper last week. And what it is that the government, the previous government, extended the cutoff date for petrol and diesel cars to 2035, but they maintained the penalties system for manufacturers to 2030. And between now and 2030, manufacturers have to achieve 80% of cars being sold being electric. And for every car more than that they sell that's petrol, they're going to get fined £15,000. And the result is that there is already starting to be rationing of petrol and diesel new cars in showrooms. And so we're working a little bit on that to raise the issue so that people understand this and they come forward.
What kind of cars do you guys have?
I've got a hybrid.
So best of both?
Best of both, yeah. I'm not getting so far down the motorway where I'm conking out with a battery, although the batteries are definitely better these days.
And what about you, Ilona?
We've literally just changed to an electric, so I don't actually drive, so I get all the brownie points for always being on public transport.
We've got the full spectrum. Yeah. I'm hybrid, he's hybrid, you're fully electric.
I'm fully electric. I've been electric for about 5 or 6 years. I was a relatively early adopter.
You were. You were an electric when they only went 20 miles.
That's right. It was horrendous. Horrendous.
I mean, so we're working on that. And what have you been working on over the summer?
For me, the big issue has been planning stuff, actually. Obviously, we have got a new government. The mood music that they are positive about is the planning agenda, housing, but also, getting development moving, getting business moving. And a lot of my clients are kind of pent up, ready to go, ready to get spades in the ground and start delivering new development. So it's quite exciting from that perspective, and we hope that will deliver some growth here in the north.
Let's talk to the other Josh and tell us the elevator pitch. I'll be able to do this to tell us what your business is. So it's called 2828. What's it do and what's the back? Why is it called that as well?
So 20 Year 28, it's we're a family run business, and it's all within the name itself. So I've got two young boys, a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. Hello, Charlie. Hello, Arthur. If they are watching anywhere,
we'll make sure they do.
Yeah, yeah. And both of them were born on the 28th of the month.
Oh, how interesting.
Which is very interesting.
I would never have guessed that.
And it comes back to the family generics and stuff around it, and being able to sort of tie it all back. Everything I do within the business is purely for my
And tell us what you do.
So within the business, we are a property investment company. We work with busy professionals, business owners, individuals, national and international, who want to make ethical property investments across the Sunderland and Durham areas. And by ethical property investments, we mean actually going out and bringing properties into good use of high quality standards. And we've seen recent news stories about the renters rebill and the renters reform that was scrapped by Conservative, and that's now being brought back in by Labour and so on. But we want to uplift them standards anyway. We want our tenants, our clients, tenants who go into those properties, to actually feel in a nice, comfortable place called home. We want to be able to give properties back across residential properties, these are, to the vulnerable families, vulnerable individuals across the communities that I was brought up in and I've grown up in, back into those areas, so that they've got a nice, comfortable place that they're able to call home.
Well, we'll get into this a bit more in a minute. What about Elona? Tell us about you. Elevate Picture Elevate, because that's what the company's called.
Right, Elevate Picture Elevate. So we are a network for people who believe that business can and should be a force for good. We do that through events, training, curated introductions, anything that helps the business community to do better. We're based in Manchester, but work across the north. And actually really interesting listening to Josh, because my family live between Durham and Sunderland. So in exactly that area that you're working in.
Well, let's pick up on both of you. Josh and I will generally throw things at you. But firstly, this property investment business. If capital gains tax is going to be increased, if people who make income from properties will have to pay national insurance on the income, this is possible things that are going on in the budget. We don't know. Will that, do you think, deter your customers, the investors?
Well, we've already seen a lot of uncertainty in the property market. So leading up to the general election, the property market became very stagnant. A lot of people were holding off in terms of putting their properties up for sale or potentially looking to buy. And that was purely driven down to the lack of uncertainty, well, the complete uncertainty of what the Labour or the Conservative government were going to do. Move forward a few months after the local election, Labour's now come in, they've come out with, and I think it's actually been publicised today around the renters rebill, that's come out, and basically, yes, it's generating a lot more of uncertainty. To touch on your point about capital gains, I've got clients who are very reluctant at the moment to sell their properties, even though they're looking to try and get out to settle their retirement. And they're very reluctant on the basis that the capital gains tax is going to increase, and therefore they're going to be pushing more of their profits down into their tax situation. So it's about having those meaningful conversations with the professionals that are in the know. So your accountants we work with, we've got our rear team of accountants, we've got our rear team of conveyancers, property experts such as myself, and then you've got your mortgage brokers and so on. So as long as you're linking in with the right people, understand what's getting put out there by the government, and then when it does get put down in black and white, fully digest that and understand, right, what are the implications behind this? But not just the implications, look at this, we're opportunity. For me, there's always going to be change coming from governments. You can take whatever the government's come out with a pinch of salt, but you've then got to look at, right, what are the opportunities? And for me, currently, we are seeing an increase, so we've started to see a slight increase in sales, properties going up onto the market. Personally, from my personal experience, I'm also seeing a bit of an exodus from the property market from your landlords.
So who are your clients then? Are they private investors, just people with retirement pots, that kind of thing? Just individuals, families?
Yeah, so we generally like to target our sort of clientele in terms of business owners, executives, professionals, directors of businesses and so on. And that's more so because we know they've got a little bit more equity available to invest, and then by putting their investment into good, it's then putting it back into the communities. And also they are, what we tend to find with busy professionals, sport athletes as well, business owners, we're all very time poor. We'd like to build and grow our wealth a hell of a lot more than what we could, maybe create an empire, create something for the long term, may that be retirement or for the family at a later point in life. But because of the everyday life and getting involved in the business, you don't actually have the time to do it. And that's where we step in and we support those professionals on that journey.
And it strikes me that you know, a lot of these people are demonized a little as the rogue landlord and so on. But if you look at the rules that were announced today, the new renters reforms, they didn't seem too onerous on the landlord. It wasn't saying the landlord can't change the rent. It just said you had to do it once a year or when the property was being relet. You can't chuck someone out to change the rent, which seems fair enough. When it comes to investing, though, but most people surely now are investing for income rather than for capital returns.
Well, it depends upon the type of clientele that you've got. So you've got a number of clientele that will look at it in terms of a monthly cash flow point of view. Mm. And with that cash flow, you can typically get a buy-to-let, which through what we target in terms of our property sourcing, you could get about a net £200 per property cash per month. But we solely focus long-term. In terms of capital appreciation within the property. So on an average basis across a long 10-year period, which if you're investing in property, you need to look at the longer term picture side of things. And you genuinely see on average, it'll increase by about 4% year on year in terms of that capital appreciation. And that's where you're then able to recycle those funds, get back, get a different property or a new property, bring it back up. And then that's where you then start generating your property portfolio building and eventually your wealth creation. But yeah, for me, it's all about working with my clients to understand what their specific needs are, communicating to them in a way that says, look, this is what we do. And what we do is buy to let properties, ethical investment. And again, touching back on the renters reform bill that was discussed and announced today, I'm quite pleased with it. There'll be a lot of landlords and a lot of people out in the property sector about Section 21, that getting abolished, which basically prevents landlords from throwing tenants out of the property without any sort of need or want. But if you look at it in terms of ethical approaches, you've actually got Section 8 in there. So if there is a problem with a tenant, the tenant hasn't paid their rent, or they've gone against any other terms and conditions within their actual tenancy agreement, then you can go down Section 8.
It seems to me that it's set to be legislation against the lowest common denominator in landlords. It's like we shouldn't need that legislation because everybody should be ethical, everybody should be delivering good quality housing. But unfortunately, there's that kind of, as you say, Graham, that minority of maybe absentee or rogue landlords who need the legislation.
Yeah, and it's how do you pinpoint them? So I get out to a lot of networking events, I get around to the local councils, landlord forums and things like that. And they're doing a lot of good initiatives in terms of trying to bring registration positions in place for landlords. But the problem that you've got is the only people that ever tend to turn up to these forums and events are the landlords that are good and have got good ethics and want to do well. But at the same time, there's also the flip side with Section 21. A lot of the landlords do utilise Section 21 to get the tenants out there when they are causing problems.
Yeah.
There's normally you've got to give them 2 months notice. So in the grand scheme of things, the difference between Section 21 and Section 28 time-wise, it isn't a great deal. What I don't think the government's specifically thought through is how much pressure this is now going to put on the courts. On the court system, because Section 21, it was a bit of a serve the notice, give them 2 months notice, and the tenants would normally leave. Now with Section 28, it gives the tenant multiple opportunities to defend their eviction, and by doing that, it's then got to fall into the court process. And we know that the court process at the moment is already bursting at the seams.
Elona from Elevate, you said earlier that you were focusing on ethical and sustainable work as well. Now, we've just heard Josh talk about the ethics, and there is a good merit in bringing communities back to use. What makes your work so ethical? Because the kind of things you advise on make common sense. They're sort of old-fashioned values, I suppose.
Yeah, so for us, it's not about finding out these are the perfect businesses that are doing everything right. It was from when we very first set up, and went, if we're going to go at this on our own in the middle of a pandemic, rather than going and finding jobs and maybe taking the easy route, we kind of want to work with nice people who are doing good things. And that kind of made sense for us personally. But we also know that that's where the best business is done. And the pandemic really showed that when business were making decisions based on values, on what was best for their customers, what was best for their communities, they actually came out of the pandemic really well. It really helped with their reputation. It helped them to get back to business faster. So we know that there isn't a choice between doing the right thing and doing the commercially best thing. And then that's just really become our sweet spot that snowballed, that the people who get referred to us is they'll say, you'll love this business. They're working really hard on a new sustainability policy, or this is the work that they're doing around diversity. And then they're the people who kind of want to hang out with each other. Similar to what Josh said, when you go to those networking events, they tend to be the people who want to do good things, they want to collaborate, they want to meet other businesses. And that's where we're happiest, and that's where we're seeing businesses get the most value.
The way you've structured your business is interesting, because you've got a core of a small number of staff at the core, which are your staff and your partner, and then associates. Tell us how you draw the expertise in and arrange it.
Absolutely. So the key for us is that we are a network, and being able to launch that business and do what we do was all about drawing on the strengths of the businesses that we work with, and we see them doing amazing things, which now means that when we take on projects, we don't have to think, can we, as our tiny little team of three, do absolutely everything, which sometimes we do when we just get very, very busy. But it's then looking at everyone else in our network and saying, oh, actually, you could do with a brilliant HR consultant. Here's one in the network that we can recommend. It may be around your social media. We talk to entrepreneurs who are thinking about scaling and selling their businesses. And we know a brilliant kind of ex-corporate finance private equity person who now does that freelance. So it's just looking at all of those different people and where we get the joy and where a lot of the value of the network is being able to join those cross-sector dots, that because we work in all those different sectors, we can sometimes see those connections and where people can support that you wouldn't if you're just going to those kind of property-specific network or a tech-specific network. It's looking at all of those crossovers.
I was going to ask you a question. You mustn't take this personally, but it's just something I've observed about people in professional services and adopted this practice myself. In fact, and it is about pricing and upfront transparent pricing, because what you've just described is lots of different people with different skills and different prices, and you presumably have your own prices because you're not a charity, you're a small business that needs to thrive and survive. And my firm is a PR firm and so on, and quite a lot of people, when it comes to professional services, worry about cost running away. And I remember when I founded the business way back in the 1990s, a very famous businessman, Duncan Bannatyne, was one of my first clients, and he asked me what the price was, and I told him, and he said, well, that's very accurate of you, why do you know what the price is? And I said, because I've set it all out in my head, I know what I want to earn, etc. He said, well, if I was a smaller business, would you charge me less? And I said, actually, no, that's the price that I've decided to charge. He said, well, why don't you print it on your brochure? There was no internet at the time, and he said, if you print it on your brochure, I'll know what your price is, it's all transparent, I know I'll pay the same as everyone else, and it avoids a price discussion. So from then on, I and my firms have always put our prices on the internet, and it's avoided a discussion about costs. So do you have a tariff list when you talk to your customers?
Yeah, absolutely, and same to you, that's on the website. If you want to join Elevate as a member, it is structured based on size of business, purely because you're going to have more people using the service if you're a large business as to a small. Pricing will always be there for if you're interested in bespoke training, if you're interested in events. If we can't necessarily give you an exact cost because we don't know exactly what you want, we'd always give an indication.
But you're the basis of it. And it's so rare, isn't it?
This is what it would be, and then work for them to do that, because especially it's a small business. If I don't know what the price is, I'm going to go to the next person that tells me, because I've always got that thing like, if you have to ask, you can't afford it. And it's like that little mentality sometimes in my head. It's like, if your pricing isn't on your website, I presume that's because you don't want to tell me.
God bless the lawyers and accountants, but you don't see their prices on websites.
I mean, actually, there's an art gallery in the town where I live, and I really love their artwork. But I've never bought anything there because they don't have any prices on anything. And I'm too frightened to ask what the prices are in case they say, oh, it's 2 trillion quid.
Yeah, absolutely.
One question for me alone, if you don't mind. And I'm going to caveat what I'm about to say by telling you that I am a fully paid up member of the Wokerati.
Oh, no.
You know, I really am.
He's polishing his halo, folks.
But something that occurs to me is this issue of sustainability, particularly in business. And lots of small businesses are almost kind of fetishizing sustainability and really, like, you know, going to the nth degree to make sure that they're paperless. I mean, I'm still sitting here holding a wad of paper. They're paperless. They're, you know, they're recycling. They're using renewable energy. How important do you think it is now? How obviously, I'm notwithstanding the climate crisis, but are we obsessing about it too much as small businesses?
So I would say we're potentially obsessing about the wrong things too much. So ultimately, the climate crisis is going to be really expensive for everyone. And we know that small businesses always suffer more than others. Yeah. We haven't got the pockets to sustain. So we need to be planning for a world that we don't yet know how we're going to cope with the temperatures, with the weather patterns that we're going to see. So we need to look at what's the cost of not acting. And then it's looking at a small business and saying, well, actually, where is it where you can do the most? So yeah, absolutely fine. Don't print stuff out. Use your renewable energy. Great. But probably a lot of the benefit is in the impact that you have on the people that you work with. So Elevate has a really tiny carbon footprint. We work out of co-working spaces. There isn't a lot there that's going to generate that. But one of our clients are Electricity Northwest, and they're leading the mission to decarbonise the Northwest. It's how can we bring more businesses into those conversations? We're accredited with the Carbon Literacy Project to deliver training. And that's all about what's actually going to make the most significant impact to your business. And for small businesses, it is probably throughout your network and the advice that you're giving, because you're not necessarily going to have the same level of control over your supply chain as a larger business might. But a lot of large businesses aren't looking at their supply chain. They're not considering where things come from, how they can help their suppliers to become more sustainable. They just kind of go, you know, well, we switched to a renewable tariff in our office. But you're not looking at where your goods are being made and how they're being transported, or whether all your partners are flying off around the world for a fancy conference elsewhere. So it's getting that holistic approach and then focusing in on the most significant points, rather than I want a cookie because I turned my light off at night. But that's not going to make a difference.
It is. And there are a lot of businesses now in the climate. I don't refer to it as a climate crisis. I refer to it as managing man-made climate change. It's less alarmist, but there we are.
But
I fully subscribe to the objective that we should use our technology and know-how to contribute less towards climate change. And it seems to be that, yes, the businesses that are operating, doing their regular thing, can make a contribution. But there are so many businesses emerging now, we're seeing them, that are bringing new technology and new ideas. It's a source of innovation more than ever.
It's a massive, massive opportunity, and particularly for the North. So you'll hear Andy Burnham, for example, talk a lot about being at the forefront of the green industrial revolution. That, you know, they're good jobs, they're highly skilled jobs, they're bringing money and investment in. We see developments like Atom Valley that will go right across Greater Manchester and into West Yorkshire. Loads of those jobs are based around advanced materials and sustainability. It's looking at how do we do things differently? What are the new products, the new processes that we can use? How can we work with the schools and colleges and universities in the area to make sure that those people who are coming out have a really good, sustainable in every way workforce, that yes, it's green, but also it's a job that's going to exist in 10 or 15 years time, where we know that a lot of others won't because of the changes that we're going to have to make. So most of the business that we talk to, it's like, yes, they are making changes, but they're also seeking out those opportunities. And certainly, if you know, we talk to anyone in private equity, they are all over this. Like, this is where they want to be investing.
Absolutely. Well, look, Josh, thanks for being the first co-presenter. We have other members of the team at Recognition will co-present as well. And Ilona and Josh, brilliant guests. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
That's it for Northern Business Podcast. Now, if you want to join us as a guest, let us know. Get in touch on LinkedIn. Look at Graham Raub or our producer, Harry Sinclair. And I want to thank Harry for producing the programme today and our technical operator, Robin Campbell. Join us next time on the Northern Business Podcast. Don't miss an episode. Like, rate and subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts.